For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Believe in UCLA Football Podcast. We'll be here with a new episode for you right after this quick note.
The last of the major pro sports leagues is off and rolling, and college basketball is ready to go as well. BetOnline remains your top spot for all of your live betting action and contests. NFL, college football, UFC, and NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for all your wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. All of the hoops betting action, along with every sport, available at your fingertips with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to BetOnline today and remember to use your promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Believe in UCLA Football Podcast. My name is James Williams, a reporter and editor for the Orange County Register and the Southern California News Group. And as always, I'm joined here by former UCLA linebacker Josh Woods. Josh, what's going on, man?
You know, kind of a pretty sad and disappointing weekend of football for me. So hopefully this is a much better week.
Well, I'm sure there's quite a few people that hope this is a better week all around on the football field. Just putting eyes on the ASU game here for a second. Just not a good showing. I mean, we've kind of hear it every year. I've heard about the last couple weeks is these Arizona teams. You got to watch out for them. If it's not one team, it's going to be the other team that sneaks up on you. They're always going to be in the mix. They're always going to find a way to get one on you. Josh, they let both Arizona teams get one up on them this season. Not a good look. I think the disappointing thing is Arizona, almost in a similar fashion to USC, has had some quarterback issues. They've had a rotation of guys based on injuries and different things. Just hasn't been going well. Obviously, they have first-year coach Kenny Dillingham. We talked about him in the last episode, him moving over from Oregon's offensive coordinator over to ASU's head coach. Obviously, that led to Dante Moore, or contributed to Dante Moore coming over to UCLA and decommitting from Oregon. But we really didn't see a lot of Dante Moore. We didn't see a whole lot of Ethan Garbers. My understanding was both of them warmed up, but actually did not play. Chip Kelly said after the game that they were more of a in case of emergency only situation. Ethan Garbers was kind of limping throughout the week. So UCLA's quarterback situation has kind of been a mess. And then you had Colin Schley, who got banged up at the end of the game, had to come out, and Mr. President Chase Griffin had to come in and finish out the game for the Bruins. But just wasn't a good showing overall for UCLA. You allowed guys like Cam Scadabo, who's a running back, throw a 24-yard touchdown to Elijah Badger. I believe that's his name, if I remember correctly. In the end zone, got one on Jalen Davies. So, yeah, it was kind of rough. And then they did the swinging gate thing. Are you aware? Have you heard of the word or the term swinging gate before?
with that's where the like special team swinging gate.
Well, they were doing this on offense where they had like three linemen out.
Oh, yeah. But I was like, majority of the time you use that like on the goal line.
Okay, yeah. But
I mean, wasn't that a big thing, like an Oregon thing?
Maybe. I mean, I feel like it may have been. I can't say I've ever heard the word swinging gate before. So I don't know. I mean, I remember some stuff in high school. They call it like the Mickey Mouse or something like that. They had some different stuff back in the day. But I mean, they did a great job. And I heard Kenny Dillingham say, he talked on SiriusXM and said, like, yeah, we just had to find some things to kind of limit the pass rush for UCLA. And if you put two linemen over here, two linemen over there, I think they just had, you know, obviously the center in front of the quarterback. You got guys like Latu just kind of standing there like, what? I guess it just really wasn't something UCLA prepared for. But yeah, I don't know. The thing is, I don't know if they adjusted very well to it, because they kept going back to it, which is a sign of like, hey, we're not going to do this once, we're not going to do this twice, but we're just going to keep running with it because that's the best thing to stop your guys' kind of pass rush. Have you, as someone who's played defense, has there ever been situations like that where someone just totally brings something out that was not part of the game plan all week and it takes you a quarter or two to just really kind of understand what the heck is happening?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't show that you're making adjustments or, if it, you know, find a way to kind of stop it, or they see that, like, you know, guys are still confused when you do it, I wouldn't stop doing it either. Yeah. I feel like for the swinging eight thing, we used to practice it once a week as a defense just to make sure guys are aligned and had matchups. Like, I remember that was one thing that we did every week, like situationally. And then, like, nobody ever ran it against us, but we practiced against it once a week.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, again, they don't let me see anything in practice, so I don't know. So, wait, so you're saying, so with Chip, like, Chip used to practice this. Is that what you're saying? Or, like, you're talking about, like, Jim Mora?
No, this is with Chip. No, I'm pretty sure. Okay. Yeah, that we used to do it. So, it's, I mean, it's kind of surprising if the guys weren't, you know, so... Yeah, it's very, very unfortunate, because like I feel like this is a game that we're expecting to pretty much win, even like with a slow start. It's one of those games, like, you know, with the quarterback situation, and like we've had slow starts before. So I think we just had the expectation of, okay, we're just going to turn it on. You know, this could be a Carson Steele game, you know, take over the run game and then just manage the rest of it. So, I mean, worrying about Arizona, yes, but I was not worried about Arizona State. And I feel like it's kind of similar to last year, though. Like after that Arizona loss, kind of deflated the rest of the year, because kind of took the guys out of, you know, potential winning the Pac-12 championship. Mm-hmm. So I hope that, you know, guys kind of, you know, rally.
They gotta do something
for this week. It's one of those deflating losses. It's kind of upsetting, and yeah, I know guys don't want to finish the year that way.
Yeah, I think one of the more notable things that I took away from this game was, like, I'm looking at, like you said, oh, this could have been a Carson Steele game. This could have been a, you know, TJ Harden game. You had Colin Schley leading in rushing with 51 yards. I believe the last time they did that, I can't remember off the top of my head what game that was. They didn't win that one either. I guess maybe that was the Arizona State or the Arizona game, maybe. But it's like, I don't know. They're not really running the ball. I don't know. I mean, Arizona State's defense isn't the worst, but I don't know, Josh. I even wrote in my preview a day or two before the game. I was like, oh, yeah, you know, this is a good bounce back game coming off of the Arizona game. You know, there's no reason why they there's no reason why they don't bounce back, and this is a good bounce back game for them, yada, yada, yada. But as I was writing it, part of me is like, maybe I shouldn't write that, because you just never know what's going to happen on the field, right? But I'm like, nah, I'm going to keep it, because what's going to go wrong? Arizona State only won like two games up to that point. And they walked out of there with the third one. They are now, 3-7 on the season. And UCLA is 6-4. So they're kind of sitting in the middle of the pack, 12 at this point. You know, there's still an opportunity to finish with 8 wins, but it just kind of leads to what is supposed to be a big game this week with USC coming to town. What direction do you want to go? And we could talk about Chip Kelly here and what some of the fallout was from the Arizona State game, or we can talk about USC. We'll try and hit both of them, but anyone in particular you want to start with?
I mean, we can start with Chip.
Okay.
As far as, I mean, seeing all over Twitter and, yeah, you know, the how it's going. And I just, it upsets me that how quick people change up. The same way I said the same thing, you know, with Dante, like how quick fans switch up. And it's like,
yeah,
you can't keep moving the goalposts. You know what I'm saying? You can't be up 1 week, down the other. And like, that's just being a fair weather fan, like being a casual. That's not really, like, you got to understand how tough it is when your quarterbacks go down. Because we saw the same thing with Coach Moore. Like, when key players go down, it's hard in college football to continue success, because it's not like in the NFL, you can trade or pick up free agents. You can, you know, have somebody immediately right away. Even with the transfer portal, you don't immediately get the kid,
yeah,
you know, the very next game. So same issues we had, you know, in the Mora era. Like, my first year, I was talking about this yesterday to somebody about it. I was like, my first year, we had 3 NFL starters go down on our defense between Miles Jack, Fabian Moreau, and Eddie Vanderdoes. And with those 3 guys, we probably win the Pac-12 that year. You know, those are 3, like, of the best players in the country getting hurt, like season-ending injuries within the first 3 weeks. And we still that year finished 8-4 in the regular season with Josh Rosen as true freshman quarterback. And I, like, honestly believe, you know, we go at least 10-2, maybe 11-1 that year, with, you know, if we had those 3 guys. The very next year, we lose the game in overtime versus A&M, and then from then on we're rolling again. One game, Colton Miller gets hurt, starting left tackle for the Raiders, and that the very next game, having, you know, inexperience in, Josh Rosen gets hurt. We don't have Josh Rosen for the rest of the year. And it was, again, we had a top 10 defense in the country that year, but we had struggles on offense. And that's another thing, like, it's hard to replace, you know, guys with injuries in college. So, like, as we've seen from there, I mean, even Moore's last year went 6-6, and there's games where Rosen wasn't hurt with injuries and stuff like that. It's hard to win with injuries in college. And I don't think you can blame coaches necessarily. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Because this week, which Slee, he's a great dual threat, but, you know, it's sometimes it's harder in the, you know, when you don't have that passing game, they can load the box up. They can send more. I mean, ASU was sending some exotic looks and hitting home on them. And that just might be because Slee hasn't had much time, you know, in this offense, in the pass game, that, you know, with different styles that Chip has kind of had the offense cater to, you know, more of Garber's and Dante's style up to this point in the year. So from ASU standpoint, they were able to, you know, load the box and, like, kind of stop the run more and send more exotic pressures, because they know that, like, if you said it was majority going to win the game, it would probably be running the ball. So that kind of, you know, takes the dimension out of the game. And I don't think you can blame a head coach for that necessarily. I don't think you can put all the blame. Of course, wins and losses, you know, it's coaches, but, like, these situations in particular, I don't think you could blame it. And, like, the hate that, you know, Chip is getting, I understand all of a sudden now UCLA, like, they lose a few games and then the whole energy shifts, but it's like, I feel like you got to keep the same energy you had a few weeks ago. And then understanding the situation of the players, like, you see in the NFL, we know when quarterbacks get hurt versus, like, and when a backup has to go in, it's that's just a tough scenario. So I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts on. I've been seeing, like I said, seeing how everybody's tweeting, and it's like,
yeah, it's been kind of interesting. So we get there on Monday. I'm like, this is gonna be crazy. I got there on Monday for practice, and you know, it was just that whole Sunday, the day before, after the game. I mean, it already, there was already some tweets. People were kind of off the Chip Kelly train after Arizona, but after Arizona State, those people who the week prior were saying like, no, I'm still with Chip. I'm still with Chip. After the Arizona State game, you started seeing a lot of other tweets from like, I was with Chip Kelly last week, but now it just, I think that was this, that was like the final straw for the, for, you know, for that last group, I guess. And it, that doesn't mean all the fans are turning on him. Obviously the vocal ones are the ones that are going to be the ones that are more prominent and the ones that are more likely to speak out. But yeah, I think Chip lost some of the fans, obviously. But yeah, we get to Monday and it was just kind of interesting. And I think the thing people don't understand too, from a reporter standpoint, is we don't like waking up on Monday for practice, going in there with our phones, our cameras, our notepads and stuff, and saying, Chip, you're about to lose your job, buddy. Yeah, like, we don't get pleasure out of that. It sucks for us too. After, go back and a lot of you guys who are listening right now, if you haven't already, go back and listen to Monday's press conference or media availability with Chip. Some of us after that went back before we watched practice. There's a little gap between talking to Chip and watching practice. A lot of us went back and kind of looked at each other and were like, I feel gross. Like, we didn't feel good or comfortable saying or asking some of the questions that we had to ask. You know, I was trying to get some stuff like just on Caleb Williams and some of the USC, just our normal kind of, hey, talk about the upcoming opponent stuff. Some of the other reporters, obviously were kind of hitting the hard questions. And I was right there, you know, I was all about trying to find out what Chip's thoughts were, on just his job status, et cetera, but it's just kind of like, heck, I still got to write a preview. I still got to talk about the USC game at the end of the day. So that's kind of where some of my questions were directed. Usually a lot of the reporters, I'm not going to lie, we sit here and talk about, hey, what are you going to ask? How are we going to ask it? Like, it's a group effort. Like, it's kind of a team effort of like, how are we going to approach this? Like, so, you know, it's a collaborative effort. So we talked a lot of that through and stuff like that and how we were going to address some of that. You know, but it just sucks. And like, we saw Chip, like, you can kind of see Chip, like, yeah, he didn't even look like he was into it that much. And then it was just weird when we watched practice, like, everyone just kind of looked deflated, felt like the music was even turned down lower a little bit. It was just kind of like, whoa, like, what is going on? Like, it was just very, like, weird. But I was back out there on Wednesday. Everything was kind of up again from what I saw. We did talk to Chip, and Chip was in a great mood, probably one of the best press conferences he's had. He was, you know, tearing up. He was kind of making fun of himself a little bit. We were laughing. It was like a roller coaster. It was all over the place. So, and then part of me is like, I don't know what's been said. I don't know if Chip's accepted the fact or what, or it's kind of weird to read the room. And this is my first kind of like situation where like coach's job is on the line. And like, we've kind of gone through this whole thing with Chip before. So that's why part of me is kind of like, I don't know if this one's any more legit than the other one. Cause it wasn't the season you were there, but it was the next season after, where it was like kind of year two. And things still weren't shaking out the way, you know, it just seemed like it was kind of the same thing as the year prior. And there were some questions about his job then and stuff, but I don't know. Will it happen? Remains to be seen. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what happens in this USC game. For Chip, if he gets fired, if Chip gets fired, they'll owe him $8 million if they fire him this week or after the Cal game. And for what it's worth, the last two UCLA coaches prior to Chip were fired after the USC game, like literally like 2 days after the USC game, a day or two after the USC game. But it just depends. It depends on how UCLA comes out in this game and how they do. We'll talk a little bit more about the game here in a second, but a lot of people, I think, were kind of surprised that he made it through this week. Because you had coaches like Jimbo Fisher, you had the Mississippi State coach get fired. And the reason, like, they're even getting fired even at this point in the season instead of, like, after the last game or after the second to last game is because the transfer portal window starts on December 4th. And so that's when guys can enter the portal, leave the portal. So there's so much movement that's going to start. And I don't, like, even the guys that got fired, I don't even think, like, or, you know, Mississippi State and Texas Tech, no, Texas A&M, excuse me. I don't even know if they're going to have a coach in time for that transfer window. So you're going to have a lot of guys leaving, but you're not going to have a whole lot of guys coming in, right? And then signing day is December 20th. Like, there's so many questions. It's more than just Chip's job. Obviously, Chip's job is, like, you know, it's unfortunate and it's a thing. But it's like there's so much fallout for this program that happens after that. And I think that's the whole anticipation, the limbo, like the uncertainty of everything is like, you know, there's been some parents tweeting saying they're not happy with the way things have gone that had just transferred in this past year. One of the parents had said that their kid told him not even to come to senior night. Like, they're like, we're going to come for the last game. And the player said, don't come.
And they're openly tweeting this?
The parent openly tweeted it.
Wow.
And I was like, ooh. It's kind of different for someone who's just popping in for a year, right? Like, they just transferred in for the year as compared to a Carl Jones or someone who's been there for 3 or 4 years. Like, that the senior day is going to mean something regardless, right? Like, yeah. For guys like that who put everything into that program. So it's just a weird situation right now. I guess before we get to USC, we kind of touched on it. I've asked you about it before, but, like, how do you guys as a team find out about Mora being let go? How do you guys focus on the next game ahead? Like, you know, like,
I mean, and the thing is too, it's like, I mean, I've told you before how the media used to be, I felt like. Like, we used to feel like the media was real, like, against us as a team. As, like, even the players, you felt like, dang, are they saying this? Or, like, I remember getting interviews sometimes, and I'm feeling like, dang, they're trying to pin me against, like, my boy, yeah. Like, the way the questions are asked and stuff like that. So, like, y'all do have a big effect on, I feel like, the fans and stuff. So, things that you guys are, you know, tweeting or saying can, you know, rile up. I feel like the fans a certain way because, you know, you guys are the ears and stuff of them. So, like, I feel like that's important, like, what you guys, you know, kind of put out there and how it's going to be perceived by them. So, hopefully, you know, y'all just are unbiased or, like, positive because some reporters are negative. And things that, you know, they put out there kind of, like I said, rile up to some of the fans and get them going.
They play to the fans sometimes, yeah. Some can, yeah.
And Chip doesn't have social media, so it doesn't matter what the fans, like, you know, what they're saying, because it doesn't get, like, Chip doesn't care. You know what I'm saying? He's gonna just try to have the team ready to win. And like I said, I know it's frustrating, but there's things that, you know, we're coming off of having a quarterback for your team for 5 years. It's not gonna be easy. You know what I'm saying?
And that's what I said at the beginning of the season. I'm like, this season is not I would say this season is about what I expected it to be, like, in terms of the record, right? Like,
because, like,
they weren't going to win 10 games.
I don't know. I mean, I think there was more winnable games, and it is what it is at this point, and I think they could finish strong, beating SC, beating Cal, winning a bowl game, getting 9 wins. But it's just the understanding the situation. Like I'm saying, like, you're coming off of having a 5-year quarterback, having guys really, like, that have been with them in the offense for 4 or 5 years, and then having new guys, like, these are just the growing pains going on. And that was one of the reasons why I felt like it would have been cool, just like, if you, the same way that people were riding with Dante, if to continue that, because it's the growing pains, because the same way, you know, we were with Dorian, like,
Dorian's, I feel like people forgot about that, like, about Dorian's, 2 years of success, they forgot about the growing pains part.
Yeah, like, there's things that we had to go through in order to have the you know, the success that we had in the past 2 years. And now I think, honestly, what it could be is fans, like, got so used to those 2 years that, yeah, they forgot about the other years. So it's like, oh, you're mad at Chip, but it's all a process. Like, Chip brought these, you know, has young guys that he's developing that, you know, eventually when, you know, in the system more, and he's Chip is going to develop. Like Dante is going to be a better quarterback at the end of this. Like, like when he's a, you know, older, maybe next year, junior or senior, like Dante's going to be one of the top guys in the country. So I feel like you stick with Chip in that sense and to get the offense going. I mean, we have a new DC. You have this defense, and next year is going to be tough. I mean, because, I mean, Latu is probably going to be a first-round pick, probably lose Darius and certain things like that. But and going into the Big Ten next year, like, why would – I don't see why people want to, you know, do all this now, be so negative now, and it's such a pivotal moment, I feel like, to keep – you need consistency. Like, we were talking to Martin, like, you need, you know, continuity and consistency – in a change like this, because if you're gonna have new everything at the time, you don't want to go into a new conference and just be like restart and be not good and not have any type of identity going into a big move like this, because that could be detrimental, and then you could end up worse, because then you, like you said, you don't have any consistency, then you're gonna have to be trying to get new kids, new coaches, and all this thing, and it's like, yeah, you don't want to be making that move worse, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I get you.
That's how I feel about like that. And then, like you're saying, as players, on the other hand, they and that's why it's one thing. I was like, what the media saying, what the fans are saying, like that can affect like the players and recruits. And the same way, like we were talking about before, like if recruits are seeing the fans hating and like talking negative about the guy that's recruiting you, then okay. So I'm saying, like, fans got to understand, if they want better players and recruits, you can't just be bashing the coaches that are recruiting the kids to go to the school. So that's one thing that factors in. And, like, I guarantee the energy and effort is going to be there. It's SC week. The boys are, you know, going to be going. They do a good job, you know, bringing in, alumni and other guys to just getting kids understanding what this game means. And it's always been, no matter what USC and UCLA's records are, no matter the situation at hand, it's going to be a competitive and a good game because, you know, it's a rivalry and everybody's going to show up. You're talking about how it was with Jim Mora. I remember it was like after or like weeks going up, one of the boosters or donors, somebody like flew a plane around the fire Mora.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. So it was like, we're seeing stuff like that. And it's like, bro, we're trying to win and play games.
This was like during, like, is this like during practice? This was like during practice
this,
and stuff.
No, this is during Bruin walk to the Rose Bowl. We're walking into the stadium. And Mora had us like meet in the middle before a game, and we're seeing that. And then it was like after the game, it was like we get everybody got a message like, oh, like optional team meeting Sunday, but in the morning, like emergency meeting type thing. We show up, and then Coach Mora's like, you know, unfortunately, like, let me go down. It was his birthday too, like, let me go, He was there, and then I think it was like or was he not there? It was like a quick transition of like in and out.
He didn't stay the whole meeting. Like, he was there. He said it goodbye.
No, it was like it was like, and then the AD came and pretty much told us like,
Dan Guerrero at the time. Yeah.
Moving forward, I was looking for a coach. And then, you know, that was our whole process, but all that really don't matter right now.
No, it's rivalry
week. It's FSC week. That's all that matters. I don't care about, you know what I'm saying? Now we got that done with. It's FSC week. You know, it's time to get this thing rolling. None of that matters right now. We need a dub. We need to beat these guys and do what we do. Let's get the bell back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying? Because it could potentially be talking about their coach. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, they got their own issues, and I'll be talking with one of my colleagues that's covering USC here in a couple hours, actually. But I mean, one of the biggest matchups for me going into this game that I'm just excited to see how it's going to play out is Caleb Williams against Liatu Latu. I want to see, like, you know, Caleb Williams, he dances around, he can, you know, make unscheduled plays, extend plays, can damn near be, you know, have his the toe of it, you know, his toe on the sideline ready to go out of bounds, and he just flings it and it just lands perfectly where it needs to into the guy's hands and stuff like that. Like, I just want to see how the pass rush is going to do against him, How are they going to limit him? How are they going to try and keep him in the pocket? Like, that's what I'm most excited to see.
That's definitely going to be an interesting matchup. Kelly Williams, we've talked about it. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the best in the country. But I feel like, you know, I've been saying our front seven is the best, you know, some of the best in the country. All these pressures and sacks. And I'm excited to see what Coach Lynn is able to dial up for, you know, for them. And, all the effort and energy and negativity out there, UCLA fans, I'm talking to you right now. Mm-hmm. Just direct that across the street for this week. Anything you have to say, just direct it at them.
I think it's going to be so interesting because this is a game. Like, this is a big game for both teams, right? And, like, they're not necessarily playing for a championship. You're always playing for bragging rights and the rights of the city and all that. But it's just, like, both teams are playing for so much. Like you said, I mean, I don't know if Lincoln Riley's getting fired, but if things don't go well, I think he goes out to the NFL or something. You know, I mean, you don't know what happens to dude. So it's a big week. I think some fans are disinterested in just what's been going on with their program. But it just reminds me of my high school rivalry too, like back in the day. Like, it don't matter how bad the teams are. I remember they said our team was going to lose. We saw it in the newspaper. They said our team was going to lose by like 21 points, 24 points. Went out there, smacked them. You know, it was like a 3-point game, but we won. So it's like, you just never know. You never know. It's just like, and like, that was one of the biggest learning lessons for me when it came to football, was like, it doesn't matter what the media says. It doesn't matter who projects what. It's like, it doesn't matter who's the favorite. And I mean, even last week was an example when UCLA was a 17-point favorite over ASU. It don't matter till you get on the field. So as long as the guys for UCLA come out prepared and do what they have to do and do their best to try and block out the noise, I think they'll have some success and could stop Caleb Williams potentially. But real quick, like, how do you tune out the noise for a rivalry week? Are you taking extra effort to put your phone on do not disturb, not to look at social media, especially with all the coaching stuff that's going on, but also just it being a rivalry game? How do you like stay away from it, or what are you doing extra to avoid the family calling for extra tickets and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. How do you tune all that out?
Yeah, that definitely is one of the things. I used to try to, you know, tell my parents, like, I got tickets for, you know, for y'all. And that's pretty much, people got to find it out themselves. I try to get that stuff solved like a few days before, so it's out the way. Even so now, like when I have people come to the games up here or people ask for tickets, like, you got to ask me by a certain time. I'm going to get that taken care of. Other than that, like, it's
right.
I'm not worried about that. Like, that you should have asked me before. Right. But like, I guarantee, you know, the coaches are pretty much telling the guys, like, all that matters is us in this building. You know, when we line it up, that's all that matters. And you're kind of tuning out that way, like, win for your brothers, win for, you know, UCLA, and like what this means, you know, what's most important. And like I said, usually it's like bringing in alumni and other guys that talking to. I mean, even you got to think about the guys that have played in this game that are in the building from, you know, Coach Foster, Jerry, Shea Pitts,
Ken Norton.
I remember
last year Ken Norton was coaching drills, and he was saying like, we're not gonna lose to Suck C or whatever. Like, during the drills, he was like
player about the rivalry. Like Kevin Jordan, like, you know, people, you know, all through the staff that have played, you know, in this, and know what it means. I mean, because I mean, you have new guys that haven't been a part of the rivalry yet, so you kind of have to, in a way, kind of educate them and help them understand what this game means to, you know, the city, and what it means, you know, in the building, and what this rivalry means. And that's even every year there's the equipment staff game.
They do that. Wait, what? I know the student newspapers used to have a game.
So every year there's a game between the EQ staff. So
really,
I don't know if they play the game at where the game is being held or if it's opposite. But yeah, like, so whenever, you know,
We just probably have to be guys where the game's being held. You know what they probably do? They probably hold it where the game's being held. And because I would imagine they're probably there like a day early or something where they set up the lockers and, you know,
It's not on the actual field. It's at the practice facilities. So it's either, so like it would be on our practice field or on SC's, practice field. And like, pretty sure Jerry would always go, and just having like guys there when it's a home game, definitely, you know, we were there cheering our guys on, because that's kind of when that's the first, you know,
so side the players of us first would day. Go. That's cool.
In support of the EQ.
Yeah, like, right.
The EQ staff does so much for us all year, setting up our indies, moving the bags, laundry, like all those little things. So like, it's their time where they go out there, they put on our jerseys, they, you know, swag out, got the Jordans on, sleeves on, like all that type of stuff. And it's our time, you know, to really like cheer on them. And like I said, like it's a rivalry, like it does mean something, you know, between them. So
because I heard, when the two student newspapers, the Daily Bruin and the Daily Trojan or whatever, I thought they always met at the, and I don't know how they would pull this off, but my understanding was I thought they always met at the venue. And I don't think it was like the day of the game, obviously. But I heard I'll have to ask Sam Conan about that.
I was like, because the equipment game might be tonight. Because is the bonfire tonight or tomorrow?
So that's the other thing. That rally that you guys normally have, it got canceled. Like, whenever it was supposed to be, what's today, Thursday? Yeah, it might have been today. It got canceled because of rain. So it might have even, what might have meant to be, yes, it might have been, yes, was supposed to have been yesterday, I think. But it got canceled because of, like, rain or whatever. And so even when that happened, people were like, what else can happen this week? But yeah, so there's no rally this week. No, nothing. Dang, they still got everything duct taped.
That is kind of sad.
Wooden, they got John Wooden statue duct taped. They have the Bruins taped up. But I didn't know they had security out there 24/7.
Usually you have some frats watching them.
Yeah, no, they have like actual security people out there now. And real quick, we got a couple seconds left. Did you hear about the Rose Bowl locker room situation? They got it figured out.
Yeah, it was some IE kids, man.
Yeah.
My thing is still confusing is how they were able to get in there, because they were they were just at the game, like recruit tickets or whatever. Right. So like, all you get is it says like, unofficial guest, whatever. Like, and you don't get to be on the sideline or still in anything during the game. So, and like, if you're on official visit, you always have a host or something with somebody with you. So like, that's how I was like that. And then it's like, there, it's the away locker room. So it's even, it would be,
that's
even
what I'm saying. That was my thing. It's a away locker room.
And that's, I'm like, whoever was watching the door, that's who needs to be fired. Or because weren't they doing their job, or it was an inside job and they, you know, cause I just don't understand understanding how the Rose Bowl works. I just don't understand how it was able to be, how it was able to happen.
Yeah, so remains to be seen. I don't know if we'll ever hear any more about that case. Hey, everybody, just wanted to take a quick break to remind you guys that the football season is right around the corner. And when you're headed out to the Rose Bowl, what better shirt to wear than a Believe in UCLA Football podcast shirt? By doing that, you're going out, you're going to the game, you're supporting your team, and you're supporting your favorite podcast at the same time. Some of the proceeds go back to the podcast and help support the content and the different things that we have planned going forward. So what better way to, again, support your team and your favorite podcast than by picking up the shirts? Now, where can you find these shirts? They're available at the Believe Network store, and we made it very easy for you. Scroll down on this podcast, check out the description. I got two links there for you for two different shirts. Make sure you check them out. Find the one that's right for you, and hopefully I see you wearing them out at the game. I'd love to see you wear them.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, You create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And a special thanks to Josh, as always, for giving some insights and his thoughts on everything that's going on as the Bruins prepare for both USC and what may happen regarding their future. And just, you know, it was kind of interesting to kind of get Josh's perspective and where things stand. Of course, everything that's been going on, the buzz around Chip Kelly's job status and more. But now we're going to turn our attention more to the game. I'm going to be talking to my colleague, USC beat writer Luca Evans. I'm happy to be joined here today by my colleague and USC beat reporter, Luca Evans. Luca, what's going on, man?
Hey, James. Thanks for having me. Excited to dive in here.
No worries at all. It's always a fun week when it comes to USC and UCLA. I know it's your first year on the beat covering USC, but how are you? Is this your first time attending the rivalry game? What do you know kind of going in? Just from a historical standpoint, as someone who may have just been watching casually prior to this year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be my first time really experiencing the rivalry. So I'm excited for the atmosphere. I know there's been plenty of debates between fans for years on, you know, who's got the better tailgates. And, you know, of course, I know the stories you know, we were all well aware and saw the sword,
right,
being duct taped. So it's clear. I think the interesting thing for me though is like, are we really going to get the full taste of, you know, the rivalry this year? Yeah. You know, I was looking back and I think there were three times in the last, like, it was like since 2007 or something like that. Like the last 17 years, obscure statistic, but like there are three times that neither of these teams came into this rivalry game unranked. And so I think you could like make the argument that this game, just in terms of pure what it means, is one of like the lowest stakes matchups in a long time. So it'll be interesting to see from that viewpoint.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that you mentioned it. So I guess I've been covering UCLA for about, I guess I'm on year five because Chip Kelly's year six. So I was there for his second year. So I'm year five. So I've been to a few of these. Last year was great. I believe it was like 68,000, 70,000 at the Rose Bowl. Good crowd. The year before, it was kind of similar where it was kind of like 1 p.m. start. The crowd wasn't fully into it. Or wasn't fully there. With everything going on the 10 freeway, I wonder how much of an impact that may have on things. And obviously, I believe we might be getting some rain for this game, if I'm not mistaken.
We were out at practice in the daylight savings. It was dark yesterday, and we talked to players at night, and it was raining, and it started picking up, and it was like we were all just soaked and just talking to players with their phones. Is pretty funny, but anyway, yeah, that'll be interesting. See if the climate picks up.
Yeah, so we'll see how things play out on the field in terms of the weather and everything else, but let's get into it. Just looking into the rosters, I'll let you go ahead and start, but any notable injuries going into this game? How are the guys doing health wise over there for USC?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. The main thing is kind of the health of the secondary. I believe Lincoln Riley said Monday on Trojans Live, the weekly sort of radio show, Jalen Smith was the starting nickelback, missed last game with injury. said he was hopeful that he's going to be back. And Jacoby Covington, who's been out for a few games, but made an impact previously at cornerback, looks like he might be back. USC needs it desperately. Things got so dire last game that they're playing guys who, you know, had played minimal snaps all year. I think they started Traquan Fagans at nickel. I don't think they started him actually, but they played him a significant amount of snaps at nickel, started Prophet Brown at cornerback. I think they'd played a total of 81 snaps all year before that. So, you know, that'll be a big boost. Yeah, I think those are the notable kind of, you know, that's the notable area of health for USC right now.
Gotcha. Yeah. When you talk about notable positions for UCLA, it has to be the quarterback position. Unlike USC, where they, you know, are pretty secure and locked in at quarterback, there's been a rotating system deal. I don't know. It's been a mess on the UCLA side, but Colin Shalee, the Kent State transfer, who made his first start for UCLA last week against Arizona State, played throughout the game, but had been dealing with some injuries as far back as camp and then even again during the season. But yeah, suffered an injury, got knocked out of the game. They had to have Chase Griffin come in for, you know, the final series or two. But, you know, Ethan Garbers and Dante Moore were both listed as emergency kind of, or Chip Kelly had them listed as in case of emergency, break glass here, have these guys play. Those had been your two main starters most of the way. So I guess you'll lean on those guys. Ethan Garbers was walking with a limp last week. So they're literally kind of limping into this thing. If I have to take a guess, I would imagine maybe Dante Moore starting unless Garbers is fully healthy, but remains to be seen. I know Colin Shalee hasn't really been practicing. Chip Kelly said he was available yesterday, which was Wednesday, and he actually just was there in a shirt. So so remains to be seen. Any other notable injuries for you? If not, we'll head on to the next question.
So, well, let's, I wanted to, so I was curious, I'm sure we'll touch on this, but with the uncertainty around Chip Kelly's job status, we'll put it that way. Do you think there's a chance, if Chip gets fired, what do you think that the probability of Dante Moore transferring is? Because I know I've been seeing some stuff about that. I know he's, you know, he came to UCLA in a lot of reasons, the faith in Chip. And I don't know. Do you see, you know, potentially him transferring out? Do you think he'll probably stay at UCLA in that event? What do you think about that?
That actually leads to what my next question was going to be as far as what's at stake for UCLA. Yeah. The status of Chip Kelly and his job status is definitely more or less on the line here, depending on how this game turns out. And then just the kind of fallout that will happen as a result of that, right? One of the biggest ones is you have a five-star prospect. Dante Moore comes in, one of the highest rated prospects in the program's history, according to 24/7 Sports. So Dante Moore was a big get. Now he may only be there throughout this season and may move on, because as you mentioned, one of the first times we even talked to Dante, we said, hey, what was it about UCLA that ended up being the right fit for you? Obviously was committed to Oregon for some time. Kenny Dillingham decides to go to ASU and become the head coach. You have Bo Nix return, and he's having a Heisman-like season. So for Dante, I mean, he had said, Chip, who else would you rather want to work under in terms of and learn from in terms of offense than a guy like Chip Kelly if you had to find a home somewhere, right? So if Chip Kelly's not there, I don't know if Dante Moore is going to be there. That remains to be seen. One thing, and maybe you can answer this, I have to look into it a little bit more. If he transfers, does it fall under his first transfer, or does it fall under, hey, they got a new coach? Because if they some of them are able to transfer if they have a new coach. So that's something I have to look into, because, you know, maybe Dante could play chess while the rest of us are trying to play checkers over here. But it kind of remains to be seen. From what we've seen from some other reports, a lot of guys are just kind of unhappy in general, and maybe leaving in some sort of mass exodus regardless. So I think if there's not the talent around the way that there is for Dante this year, then yeah, I think it could be likely that he's on his way out. But yeah, what about for USC? What's at stake for you guys kind of coming into this game?
For USC, kind of a whole little bit of a separate set of circumstances. I don't think there's not going to be some sort of mass exodus. There are a few guys who I'm sure are going to, hit the road for the portal after the year. But I think really, and you think, oh, the focus is probably on Chip's job status this game. I think the biggest thing for USC is, this could maybe be Caleb Williams' last game. And, a guy a lot of people call generational prospect, and, has brought a lot of pride, a lot of notoriety, I suppose, back to USC's program. Not that that didn't plenty exist right previously, but just sort of reinvigorating the fan base. And it's interesting, he said yesterday hadn't made a decision on it, probably going to take some more time over Thanksgiving. Lincoln Riley said hadn't talked to Caleb about it. So everything sort of kind of hush hush at the moment. But I there was sort of, with the rain and just some of the comments, it just felt like the realization of setting in, like, man, this could be the last time that, Caleb Williams talks in front of this USC practice backdrop on Wednesday. So, it could bring about the end to, one of the best careers by a college quarterback in recent memory. And if that's true, if Caleb Williams decides to head for the draft and, forego both a bowl game and his third season potentially at USC, that just opens up a whole host of questions for the program, where Caleb Williams has it's like that flex seal tape meme, the guy slapping it on the tank and the water coming out. It's like he's elevated this program and covered up so many kind of issues here and there as a generational quarterback talent will do. And without that, be interesting to see what USC is left with. They've got pretty capable backup in Miller Moss. They've got another five-star guy, Malachi Nelson, waiting in the wings. Unclear if maybe he'll be ready yet next year. It's the question of, do they bring in another guy from the transfer portal, which Lincoln Riley said, there's no one way or the other, but it's possible. That's just a major, major question for the future of the program. And then also Lincoln Riley has said, he expects the defense to take a big step forward this week. You're week two, removed from the Alex Grinch firing, and going into a big, couple of weeks to see who will be next, USC's next, coordinator at that position. So, I think those are really kind of what's at stake for USC, and not so much in this game, but just kind of a look ahead to what the future of this program could be.
Yeah, and speaking of the Trojans relieving Grinch of his duties, that was actually one of my questions for you is, where is the defense kind of at right now? You said, they can kind of take a step here in week two with the new group of guys they have kind of running that defense, but you're not really installing a whole lot of X's and O's, new plays, new schemes or scheme or anything like that. So, what is the mood, or what is the kind of, the vibe you're getting from some of the guys when you're able to talk to them during media availability?
Yeah, I think the sense is, Brian Odom, Sean Nua, the co-interim defensive coordinators, maybe been able to simplify things a little bit. They both obviously talked about they're not reinventing the wheel here. They don't want to confuse guys with concepts, what have you. But we saw, it takes time. The ship won't just be righted by the absence, of one individual. It's still the same kind of scheme and just major, major issues that we've seen all year. Last week against Oregon, with big plays, giving up explosive plays in the secondary. A lot of miscommunication, it looked like at times. You had guys, you know, holding their hands out after touchdowns, what have you, that just kind of emblematic of this, you know, year's defensive performance as a whole. And
right.
The thing, you know, that the one, you know, tiny silver lining was their run defense did look a little bit improved, against, you know, one of the best rushing attacks in the country, really. I think the biggest thing against UCLA, and it'll be tough to kind of judge really how much this defense is improved by the quality of the unit it's playing against, because, you know, I'll transition that into a question for you, but just about, I mean, what's UCLA's offense, you know, looking like at this point? There's been a lot of chatter. It's kind of interesting. Yeah. It's like the narrative has completely flipped, mm-hmm. from the bad years of Chip Kelly defenses to now's offense. It just seems like it can't score on anyone. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's been kind of wild. So I guess the last 3 weeks they have seen a decrease in production, just in terms of like, you know, the amount of points they've been able to put on the scoreboard. Again, it has been kind of interesting, because when you had a 5-year guy at quarterback, like DTR, who provided a level of consistency, you're not getting that just with the injuries and the inexperience at times with what you have now at the quarterback position. So yeah, that's kind of where the struggles have been, is just with the quarterback position. You have two solid guys back there, in the backfield with, Carson Steele and TJ Harden. I think it's important for them to get those guys going. And then if it does open up a little bit, maybe allow yourself to get the passing game going. But they haven't been able to even take advantage of the talent that they acquired out of the transfer portal. Before this 2022 season, they put a heavy emphasis on grabbing guys out of the transfer portal and really building up that defense to what we've seen it to be now. And we'll probably talk about the defense here in a minute. But they spent this past or before this season, they spent the offseason through the transfer portal building up this offense, right? And, well, trying to build up the offense. They went and got the Cal receiver, J. Michael Sturdivant. They got USC receiver, Kyle Ford. And you think those guys are going to come in and be some game changers for you, and it just hasn't been there. And I think it all just kind of goes back to what's been going on at quarterback, because and maybe you can, and sometimes I hate even saying that, because for a guy like J. Michael Sturdivant, sometimes it's a matter of he's just such a focal point for opposing defenses that they try to just take him out of the game completely. So sure. It's hard to, so I wouldn't go as far as to call him a bust, but you know, you're looking for a guy to be the deep threat that sometimes has been missing in UCLA's offense in recent years and stuff like that. And J. Michael was supposed to be that guy, but it just hasn't been there for them. They've been leaning on Logan Loya, the St. John Bosco product, as a guy that's been pretty consistent for them. They do also have Carson Ryan. They've been leaning on the tight end position again, which is not a surprise. They've been doing it in the past with Chip Kelly here at UCLA. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do kind of get it together. I'm not sure how they've done against tight ends this year, but Carson Ryan, there's a few Carsons on this team, but Carson Ryan is one that I would expect to maybe find his way into the end zone in scoring for the Bruins. But again, that's just a matter of if they're able to even establish the passing game. But I think it'll all start with what they can do with the run game there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it'll be interesting to see too, you know, how I think one of the big things that I've, you know, identified for why the season just fell apart so catastrophically since, you know, past couple months for USC is just, you know, the defensive line was supposed to and looked for about 3 weeks like it was a legitimately improved unit. You know, he brought in transfers. Solomon Bird was making a huge leap. Jameel Muhammad came in as a big transfer addition. Bear Alexander making a huge impact at nose tackle. And they were generating a ton of pressures. And then I think about midway through the Colorado game, it was almost like Shedeur Sanders kind of, at least Colorado's offense, figured out, you know, that they needed to get the ball out quick. And since then, there was a clear noticeable change in that game. And since then, just the overall pressure that they've generated as a unit has just fallen off a cliff. And, you know, you can kind of trace a line correspondingly to where their season has gone. Because if they're giving other quarterbacks time to throw, there's just not enough consistent talent in that secondary to you know, overcome that. So I think that'll be a key kind of point of emphasis in this game, to see if, you know, the line can kind of salvage a little bit of that, you know, early season juice. I don't know, what do you see as kind of key points from UCLA's point of view?
Yeah, actually, so one thing for me, this is definitely a matchup to watch for me, is I'm curious to see how guys up front for UCLA's defensive line, which has been for the most part spectacular all year, led by Liatu Latu, how they do against Caleb Williams, just because Caleb Williams is, you know, you think he's running out of bounds and he just manages to turn his arm some sort of miraculous way to get it to receiver and end up making a big chunk play or something along those lines. But I'm just curious to see what kind of pressure that they are able to apply to him. I mean, they've been able to do so against guys like Shedeur Sanders and other guys this season, but I think Caleb Williams is just on another level. But Liatu Latu has been solid. The Murphy twins have been solid as well. I think the one thing for me is those guys, sometimes they need to kind of keep the emotions in check. Chip Kelly's always talking about, you know, playing with emotion and not letting emotion play with you. I think that continues to be a work in progress for some of the guys on the front line. But with a guy like Liatu Latu, his goal at the beginning of the season was to get 15 sacks, and he has 11 currently. Now, I think the one thing to also keep in mind was, I think Liatu Latu said himself, is that he's excited to play against some of the, you know, the Pac-12 conference being this, you know, with all the spotlight being on the offenses and the quarterbacks, Bo Nix, Penix, Caleb Williams. He said whenever he gets an opportunity to play against guys like that, that's what he's kind of striving for, and that's what he's kind of thriving off of, or that's kind of the motivation there for him. So I think he'll definitely be playing up for this game. And I guess my question to you is, how has the offensive line held up, and where have they been with opposing pass rushes and trying to stop those and kind of keeping Caleb Williams clean when he does stay in the pocket?
Let me tell you, I feel like if his goal was 15 sacks, he's at 11.
You think he's hitting it?
I don't know. I don't know about the bowl game, but you know, you could get a couple against USC, and you know, that's not to disparage. I do think their offensive line has been pretty steady for the most part this season, but steady, and you know, they'll give up pressures. I couldn't believe my eyes when I checked the stats from Oregon USC. Speaking to both, you know, just how much USC got out physical, but Oregon generated 23 pressures and USC generated 3. So there was just a complete, flip flop in that. The line, there had been some struggles. They had a notable kind of switch. Michael Tarquin, who was the starter at right tackle, got benched. They moved Jarrett Kingston, who was the right guard, to right tackle, and they put backup Mason Murphy in at right guard. Whole, you know, formation switch there. And since then, it worked for a couple games. Well, Oregon really, again, just out physical, manhandled them on the offensive line. I expect, you know, you could see the same from UCLA's front. Caleb Williams played like the most unhinged game of football that I've maybe seen a quarterback play against Oregon. Right. He resorted to simply running 360 degrees in the opposite direction, right, in the pocket, outside of the pocket, going back in the pocket, going outside. It was just, backyard football with that guy. I expect they'll probably, you know, be running away from Law 2 for a, multiple times this game.
And I don't blame him, because I think there'd be quite a few people who are running away from Law 2 if they see a guy of his size and caliber coming their way. So I don't blame Caleb Williams at all.
Yeah, and so I think pretty big test for the line again. It'll be curious to see, I think, from USC's perspective. There's some young guys in the wings who haven't really gotten much of an opportunity this year. A few transfer guys who have been pretty steady all year, but, you know, there's only so high of a ceiling there. So maybe you see a little bit, you know, a few fresh faces to try things out on the offensive line this game. Not sure, but yeah, I'm betting Law 2 still has a chance at that 15 mark. So, yeah.
And just as we kind of wrap things up here, again, make sure you guys follow our coverage. We are covering both sides of it pretty well, both USC and UCLA, all season long. And as the season kind of finishes up here, at ocregister.com. But Luca, how do you see this game playing out? What do you think the keys to victory are for USC?
I think I see USC matching up pretty well with UCLA. From my point of view, I don't think, I mean, it's kind of a case of two really struggling units going head to head, and yes. You know, unstoppable force, immovable object sort of situation, but the negative of that.
Yeah.
I think personally, if it is Caleb Williams' last game, you know, this, I just think, I don't think UCLA's offense has shown quite enough in recent weeks. You know, USC's defense has been not good, but they did hold Oregon to 36 technically. And I think it'll be tough for UCLA to crack 30 in general. I think Caleb Williams puts up more than that. I do probably see USC taking this game. I don't think it's going to be a barn burner like last year. That's for sure. But yeah, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. I had been thinking about it just the last couple of weeks. Anytime I'm listening to the radio or something like that, and I'm hearing just conversation about USC and stuff in general, and I'm like, I'm kind of looking forward to this game because, one, you just never know in a rivalry game. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, the big matchup is USC's offense and UCLA's defense. Unfortunately for UCLA, the defense is, I mean, they could score points, but they really haven't scored points. And that's more of the offense's job to do. So I just think that's going to be the downfall, is the offense not being able to produce the points that a Chip Kelly offense is usually able to do. So I would definitely give the edge, I think, to USC in this matchup. Again, it would be, I want to say a miracle, but I think a lot of things would have to work in UCLA's favor if they want to come out of this game victorious. But yeah, Luca, again, as we just kind of wrap things up, any final thoughts before we head on out of here?
I think it'll be interesting to see who wins the battle of fairly low stakes here. Well, we say fairly low stakes, like in the moment, but there are like very big program implications for yes, both,
no doubt
for
about
both
it,
schools that will come out of this. So it's kind of, it's almost like a win and you avoid some of the, you know, some of the heat, some of the flack that'll come with a loss. There's not really a huge upside to winning this game. There's right. The upside is not losing. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And for me, I think, yeah, it's like you avoid the fallout and everything, at least for another week. For UCLA, yeah, exactly. At least they still have to play Cal after this. And that's supposed to be senior night in a happy moment, but who knows where UCLA will be by the time they come out of this game. So with that being said, as I mentioned before, make sure you guys go to ocregister.com and we'll keep you updated on all the storylines that take place before this game, during this game, and after this game. Luca, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
This is the Believe in UCLA Football Podcast presented by Bet Online.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.